country who are either making their living or augmenting their living using the methodology. But we're not here to sell you a methodology.
This, some ground rules before we get into it. We've handicapped together before. You're going to get a little more of my influence this time than we've ever done before. But it'll still be developed in a group. I'm going to play the devil's advocate most of the way through this. When push comes to shove, I'm going to do the pushing and you got to let me shove. We're going to go to pace lines, we're going to go to contenders. When we finally get to a point, I want them to represent what I would do, because that was the whole reason we're doing this. But I want to develop everything from the class, I want to develop pace lines from the class, and then, like I said, I'll be the final word on this. You'll open up to the first race, we get right on it. What we're going to wind up doing is I think we're going to make a mix on these races. We'll do it as we go, because not everyone's using my variance, not everyone's using synergism. What we'll probably wind up doing is doing a few of these races raw. And at Hollywood Park, if you're dealing with sprints, the meeting has been pretty much, you can do most of the races raw. I've made the track anywhere from about slow one to fast one or fast two the whole meeting. It's really been a steady, consistent racetrack. So we'll do some of the races probably raw. For those of you that don't have variance, just to illustrate that process, especially if we have to adjust somebody from Sanity or something like that, bring them into this format. We'll do probably one or two races with synergism. Maybe we'll use a Meridian variant for another one. So we're going to kind of mix it up because not everyone's on the same wavelength, and that way we'll demonstrate several programs. And I'll choose what we're going to do mainly based on how the race appears to me, because I don't want to be out on a limb and have you guys saw it off on me. First of all, yesterday, one of the points that I'm going to make before we get very far into this, and even though we don't make a big issue of bias other than track bias, early, late, and so on, if you're not reading the charts every day and paying attention to the post positions that are winning out there and where the horses are coming from, you're doing yourself a disservice. From day one at Hollywood Park, in the one-turn mile, the sprints, the inside posts, the inside two or three or even four posts have been at a serious disadvantage. Serious disadvantage. And if you look at this week, first of all, Bold Archon won down on the rail with a class edge. He managed to win, and unfortunately, I had been Claremont, the horse he beat in the photo. Then in the ninth race that same day, in a one-turn mile, horse called Vigora won. But she came off out of the two post, but then circled the field to win. So that one doesn't really count. You pay attention to that race. And unfortunately, I was sitting on a horse called Prize Shot, who I got beat a couple of inches with that one, too. But that doesn't change my approach to the game at the moment. If you're betting the inside post positions at Hollywood Park and the sprints and the one-turn miles, you are at a serious disadvantage. And I hope that, how many of you have observed that? Okay. How many of you believe that? Okay. Believe me, it's true. Go back over your charts for the last few weeks. Go back over the charts for the whole meeting if you keep them. And you'll see that the inside posts, horses that should run well, generally get beat down. And it's been that way from day one. Now, unfortunately, I was playing kind of irregularly at the meeting. And I keep part of my model from the results charts is to record post position also, first two finishes. And I got to tell you, for 3 weeks, I was blinded to it. I wasn't looking for it. And I just sat there and fat, dumb, and happy. I was losing some weight at the time. But I was fat, dumb, and happy, and not realizing that the inside bias, there was such an anti-inside bias in Hollywood Park that it was 3 or 4 weeks into the meeting before I even caught it. And that, shame on me, because that doesn't usually do it.
Well, I've been trying to get away from things like bias. So, but my question is, I haven't been paying any attention. Is that all critical?
All the sprint distances and the one-turn miles. It's been terrible. Go back. But I got to tell you one thing. Don't just accept that for me. Go back to the charts and read them. Prove it to yourself before you get into that. And normally we don't make a whole a big issue of that here, and because you do yourself more damage than good. But on the other hand, you're also facing reality at the racetrack. And if you're betting those inside posts, especially when they're shorter prices, you take a horrible beating.
You have a theory of why this is true, or do you not care?
I don't care. And I don't really have a theory.
Tom?
Yes.
When you say that, given the bias, now, so what in handicapping? Does that mean you eliminate the horse? You mark the horse down? You want to bet an exacta? If the numbers come up, inside horse, now what do you do?
We're going to go through that today, because we're going to face some inside horses. But the answer, I'll give you a quick answer to that, but then we're going to have to go through every race. But my quick answer to that has been for me to, is for me to include them in the race, and then bet against them. Even if they come out number one. I include them in the race, mainly because there's always, I mean, we're all human beings here. And if I eliminate a horse that looks very good down on the inside, that is going to nag me right here. On the other hand, if the horse comes up inferior from the inside, then I know I was right to eliminate it. At least I know that I'm betting against what might be the best horse this way.
Okay, so you're not saying, well, the horse has everything that I like, but he might be a few lengths short because of the inside bias.
And it's been at least a few lengths short.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to.
It's been incredible.
What are we talking about?
All right, a lot of the races, now I'm not going to pose that on you. We're going to approach that a little differently. A lot of the races that I've been handicapping lately, I've just been striking the first three or four horses in the race. Okay. But I'm willing to live with that most of the time. Today, we're not going to live with that. We're going to go through the process because it just happens to be the way Hollywood Park is running right now. And the minute they go to Del Mar, it'll be something entirely different. And normally we don't pay a whole lot of attention to it, but if you're not paying attention to it, like I said, you're doing yourself a real disservice. Yesterday's race. Keeping a model, what is the ideal, in fact, everybody write this down, please, but what's the ideal energy number, early energy number in sprints?
52.90, 52.70.
I hear a lot of things. I hear 52.90, 52.70. Anything else?
Single ideal number?
Single, no, then we'll expand on the range. Just give me the center number. If it's 52.70, we'll go to 53.20 and down to about 53 or 52.20.
See, each one has a different
number. Just give me a ballpark number to work with.
I would say 52.80.
That's what I would say. Will everybody buy 52.80 is about the right number?
Pardon? 53.50.
That's extremely high. Anyway. What program are you on?
Synergism is a little different, but it's not that different. Are you taking them from the results chart?
No, I was up again yesterday, except for one race.
Handicapping.
I did, that's
okay,
what
okay, well, that 53.50 that is coming from handicapping, so that would be Santa Anita lines and other lines right. Mixed in.
Let me impose this on all of us. We're going to use 52.90. And we're going to range down to about 52.30 and up to about 53.40. Okay. That's what we're gonna look for. What style of horse is winning the sprints at Hollywood Park? What's the running style?
Early piece.
Early
and
aggressive.
Yeah, a little more aggressive than
okay, it's close though.
Yeah.
I think it's a little more pressers than early too, but it's awfully close. So we're gonna look for early and pressers in the 52.90, slightly above, slightly below. That's what we're looking for in the sprint. Everybody written that down? Because I didn't. That's what I'll have to ask you folks again as we go through that. What about the one turn mile?
I'm getting a lot of variance on that. I started out with a lot of early.
Well, yeah, but let's talk about an energy number first.
All
right, that's high for Hollywood Park.
For last week.
Oh, forget the last week. I mean, overall, then we'll talk about it.
51.80.
Okay. All right.
A little higher than that, but that's not.
Okay, for the meeting, does 52 sound too far off base?
No, I'm higher than 52.
52, it has been about 52 for me over the last couple of years, as a matter of fact. It's been very consistent distance. So if we say 52, ranging up to about 52.50, down to about 51.50, on a one-turn mile, anything within that range, we ought to be pretty safe with. Now, what about running style in the one-turn mile? Now, you should all have these answers, and then there's a reason we're going through this, so that if you don't have them, you'll know to have them for your own handicap.
Pressers and early pressers.
All
right.
I should get a real
competition. Okay, two kinds of horses that are winning in the 1/3 mile. That early's not one. Well, that doesn't leave a lot, does it? Pressers and sustain have dominated the 1/3 miles of the whole meeting. And lately it's been pretty sustained. Unfortunately, that was.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of pressers this week. And it's been pressers and sustain in a 1/3 mile. One-turn mile is really the only sustained distance. And it's been pretty consistent through the meeting. Forgetting the turn, we're going to talk about turn. Pressers and sustained. And early pace horses have not done well in the one-turn mile. And if you're keeping material like that, or keeping a model based on results chart, you're not writing down the running style, you're not writing down early very often. No, I'm saying mid-pack. Mid-pack is kind of a closer presser type, sustained presser, if you will. Okay? Early is on the lead, within challenging for the lead. You know, on the lead or half length neck, you know, horses that are actually trying for the lead. Those horses are not doing well for the meeting.
How about pressers versus early?
Well, pressers anywhere from a length to 2.5 lengths behind.
Oh, early is closer to the lead.
Early is a horse that's actually challenging for the lead.
Right.
Normally be in the lead, you know the horse. Okay. Now we've got that together. Now, what about the two-turn routes at Hollywood Park? Let's talk about energy first. What's the energy number?
52.40. I have it higher. I don't know if it's true or not. But
okay. 52.40. All right. This is a trick number. This is a trick question. I hope that you've made the conclusion by now that you cannot trust the early energy numbers in the routes at Hollywood Park. You can't be trusted. And I'll give you an example of that. Yesterday we have three two-turn races. The first race is run in 51.3. The next one's run in 53.75. The other one's run in 52.4, which gives you a range of 51.3 to 53.8 yesterday. Could be an isolated day, but it's not. That's the way the meeting has been running. And I would suggest to you, one thing you got to know about yesterday's race, all three of those races were won by pressers. In spite of that early energy number, all three of those races were pressers.
I've got the last 26, mile 16th being won from less than 2 lengths.
That's where we're going to go now. That's the next step. So ignore the early energy. I mean, when you get it bouncing around like that, to that extreme, forget early energy. You know, early energy is very valuable in the sprints. It's very valuable in a one-turn mile. It's worthless in the mile 16th races. The reason it's worthless is that everybody out there now realizes where you have to be at the first and second calls in those two-turn rounds. And it's been that way ever since they rebuilt that racetrack. It's been the horses that can compete early to the half mile, especially to the second call, the three-quarter mile. So the pressers and early types, pressers being favored, early types being second, are the horses that you're looking for, getting energy. And like I said, yesterday the range was 51.30 to 53.80, and they were all pressers. They could all be there at the second call.
I don't know about anybody else. I think you may have put this finger on something that bothered me about my handicapping, maybe that went off the betting. I felt so much, I felt that either I was picking the wrong pace line or every horse was an exception to the rule, but I couldn't find the rule in there. So I was doing something wrong because at Santa Anita there was quite a good consistency.
Energy was consistent.
Yeah, they could rely on that. So I figured I was doing something wrong in the rules, and I just went back to right off.
Now, what's happened is that everybody out there realizes where you have to be at the second call, so it takes a lot early to be there, they use it, and that brings the energy way up. If you have a race like Diamond today and Vital Scores race yesterday, they were all capable. Vital Scores normally a closer, but that was a race no one could get to the second call unless at about 112 and 3, 113 on the best race. So all of a sudden, Vital Score becomes a presser, and she's bettable. I didn't bet her. I bet Diamond today, to be honest with you. I thought she was an absolute winner, but did not win it. But nevertheless, the point is that energy had nothing to do with that race. It was where they could be at the second call. And you've got to be within a length or two at the second call. So you're looking for pressers and early pace types in the two-turn routes for getting energy. And we have that one together. What about on the turf? Okay, what about our energy number first?
Yeah. What about age and sex relationship?
I like them both. I'm 11 years. I still like the second part of that question.
The younger horses seem to run with a higher relay energy.
Yeah. That's the nature of racing here, because they're not fully mature. They don't finish as well. You know, it's when you take three-year-old fillies, for example. The extreme is a three-year-old filly versus older, the same day. The three-year-old fillies will run just, lights out as far as they can run, and then they really get tired. The older horses have learned to rate and to run and level out a little bit after the quarter, and energy's up. Younger horses can find it higher. That's just built into the game. What's the early energy number?
51.17 for the mark.
Okay, 51.17. 51. There you go. Okay, let's use 51. Yesterday's two races were both run at 50.4 or something like that. But we use 51 and we'll range downward and upward from that. We use 51. Now Hollywood, they rebuilt Hollywood's racetrack. The turn course. You know, they extended that clubhouse turn to a great extent. And the minute they did that, that early energy number that used to be 49 jumped up to like 50.8, 51. It's remarkable, and the fractions are run. I mean, they're running 108.4 out there. They really run fast over that course. Yeah.
Is there a difference substantially enough between rails up and rails down?
Absolutely. And there's a difference between shoot start and stretch start. And you see that it's reflected in the fraction. I can almost tell you when I'm making the variance, when I look at it, I pretty much know whether it started on a stretch or in the shoot.
Does it pay to keep a separate model?
Yes. I think so. But let me tell you something. Is it sustained that you're looking for? You're looking for pressers on that turf course. Now, forget the number for a minute. The 50.4 just happens to, or 51 represents energy on the turf, which is always lower than on the dirt. Always. What kind of horse do you want at 51? Do you want a presser, or do you want it early, or do you want a closer? I've been betting pressers the whole meeting. Okay. Early speed is done very well on that turf course for the minute. And pressers seem to have an advantage. I put more pressers into my model than I have anything else.
Pressers capable of sustained
or
killers,
like mine. Okay, pressers capable. So you get it's built in. If you make your energy number 51, and you have a presser that fits 51, you just got the presser that's able to sustain. That's why it's so powerful to use all the pieces of this.
Are we talking all distances
now? We'll just talk. We're talking all turf distances. Okay, but then we'll separate. I mean, if you get too many horses wanting to lead, then you want to go a little further back to one of the other horses. All right. That's where we're going to start today's exercise. And I hope you wrote these things down, because those are the things we're going to be looking for. So let's go to the first race.
Tom, you had 51 as the midpoint for turf. Now, how far are you going to go
about
down?
About 0.50. That's pretty universal.
0.50.
Yeah. 51.50 down to about 50.50,
50.40.
You got it.
I know you said you didn't care why, but let me ask
most of the time, they're coming out a couple of steps slow. And when they do get the lead, it took so much to get there that they don't hang on.
So, for instance, if you say you've got a horse on the outside that you think needs a low map, and if all the speed's on the inside, maybe it's going to get it then?
Could get it. could get it. I mean, if you look at some of... Okay, well, we'll get to that, but we'll research that. But think about yesterday's races for a moment. The seventh race yesterday, you got Vegas Eagle in there at 7-5 in the three post position. You got Bolshure, who's the only speed in the race, really, drawn on the extreme outside. And if you go back over the, just go back over this week's charts, and you see the horses that have been drawn on the outside have been the horses to dominate the races. And we'll spend one more minute with this. The first race yesterday, 6 furlongs. The first two finishers are the 10 and the 7. The three horse, who ran a good race anyway, is 2-1 and is the co-favorite in the race. She ran pretty good, but it's the 10-7. The second race is 6.5 furlongs. The first four finishers in the race are 6, 10, 11, and 12. The fourth race, now let's get that, those are final 16ths. The 6.5 furlong sixth race, the first two finishers are 9 and 8. The seventh race, the first finisher is the 7. That's 6-7 for yesterday in those races. And if you go back over this week, you'll see the same thing holds true, but a couple of exceptions. I mean, every week there's an exception or two. I mean, there's a space, it's racing. But the only exception that I'm aware of this week was Bull Barker. And he was down on the rail all the way, really ran game. And the other one you might look at and think's an exception, and that was Magora. But after she got out, she fell behind the field and circled everybody who went to race. So I mean, that gets her off the rail. Yes.
Correctly, it was this way last year at Hollywood as well.
Off and on.
I think I do.
Yeah, off and on.
There were some pretty long stretches. Yeah.
It just, the rail just, the footing on the rail just must be deep there. It's like Golden Gate is deep, a lot.
How are you feeling with the different stretch finishes?
Well, actually, the only moving around she has now is the one turn by. That's the only moving around. All the rest of the races use the old finish line. And so anybody have my par chart for Hollywood Park? Raise your hands. Okay, get your hands up. Write this down, please. Change the fractional time at 6 furlongs to 45 and 2. I think I showed it 45 and 3. For Hollywood Park. Hollywood Parks. Did I say Hollywood Park?
Hollywood Park.
Okay. Look at the $10,000 race.
Oh, okay.
$10,000 par. I'm sorry, I should have said the $10,000 par, make that 45 and 2. Okay, and then just adjust all of the rest of them accordingly. Just put them all down one. Okay, that's the adjustment, yeah. Okay. It's just, I didn't have much data to go on. The old finish line was between 45 and 3 and 45 and 4 to the half. The new one, or the, let me back up. The new finish, the one they used for a while, produced a very slow half mile. And they ran, the $10,000 horses ran about 45 and 3 to 45 and 4 in that area. Using the old finish line, they run about 45-1 to 45-2. So 45-2 is the problem. They just run faster than that. Here we go. First race, $10,000 claiming race for horses bred in California. This is, I think Howard did this to me. Well, we won't need it for a while, yeah. But yeah, can you move this over? Use it. Scratched out of the race are numbers 2 and 4, which is detector for pinfall. Big feet here in a way. All right, so get rid of those two horses. Now, anybody with that par chart that I just mentioned, what is the par for a 6 furlong race, $10,000 at Hollywood Park?
5280.
Forget that for a minute. Just give me the times.
45-2-111.
All right, 45-2-111. Is that what? No, I think it's 111-1. You got the old par. What else have you got here? Anybody have 111-1? All right, 45-2, 111-1. Let's go through the race for a moment and identify running style. That's the first step. Look at end play for a moment. What's the running style for end play? Who wants to call him a presser? It's kind of important we get these things right among, you know, as a group. Who wants him as a presser? All right. I've got to tell you what he is. He's not a presser. What he is, if you go back to December of 86, you might call him a presser back at Hollywood Park. But what he is, he would be considered a mid-pack closer. Okay? He is a closer this year, and you might modify that a little bit by saying he's a mid-pack, but he is a closer. Okay? So we'll put sustain on him and label him that way. Hasty Holiday. Okay, let's take a look at him for a minute. Caliendo was able to press. What's he do in the United States? What is he in the U.S.? Forget his Caliendo resistance. No, he's not a sustained horse. Hasty Holiday. He's not a sustained. Look at these. Let's define what we're doing here. What we're doing is saying when he runs his best races, coupled with his normal running style, what is it?
He's early.
He's early, isn't he? So we got an early pace horse. So make him an E. What about forcefully? All right, let's look at it. His last race, he was up close, which is normally not where he is. Yeah.
Yep.
He's normally a little further back than that. I would label him. Impressive. Whoa. I'm sorry. You put words in my mouth. I would label him a closer, a sustained horse. Anybody have fault with calling him a sustained horse? We'll decide on that. But let me tell you why we're doing it this way. Quite often, your temptation is to call a horse a no-form horse. And when you're finished in this process, you realize that you just made him the only E horse, too. And that moves the horse up a lot. Even a horse that's out of form has a chance of entering. What about Ed's Fantasy? Here's a horse that hasn't been around for a while.
He's just in.
Let's take a look at him. Okay, let's develop this as a group because I don't want us to go wrong on the website. What is Ed's Fantasy? Well, let me introduce a piece here, and that is a horse that's been away for a while, and a horse that's fresh generally has a little more speed than they had the last time you saw them, and. We're gonna have to work with this guy for a minute. Can you find a layoff on this horse anywhere in here?
Let's, on
February 17th of 86, draw a line through that race, because it was on a sloppy racetrack. And now, I would call, let's take a look at the horse's best races. On March 8th, he broke slowly. I would call him a mid-pack closer. Anybody have any problem with that?
No.
So that makes sense.
I have no problem with trying to identify a style of the horse anyhow. He's been away for so long. I mean, you have to throw out that lousy race in 87.
Audie, the only response I can make to that is you have to turn the page and go to another race if you're not willing to do that. You have to do this. This is part of handicapping the race.
A horse that's been away for 2 years? How often does a horse that's been away 2 years win a race?
Once in a while. Let me tell you what I would do with this horse. because we'll all do it in a few minutes, we're going to probably eliminate it. Okay, but right now, we're trying to identify the running style of these horses. Now, and the reason for all of this is that if we wind up with one horse that ranks as early, I don't want three horses that I looked at and said, I don't like these horses. Because all three of them might have been early if I'd have done the job. Okay?
It was very close to stuff.
All right, let's make this horse a sustain, huh? From mid-pack, though. He's not a deep closer. What about Lover Rouge? Anybody have any problem with making this horse a presser? Leeward Pirate.
It used to be a presser. It went kind of far back the last couple of races. Because the last one was a full size.
Stockton. Now, this horse had been away for over a year. I would call this horse, unless you want to go back to July of 86, what would you call this horse?
Pressure.
It's a sustained horse.
I'd call it a sustained horse. It managed to press a race at 7 furlongs on July 17th of 86, but folks, look at the fractions of that race. They ran 46-3, and because he happened to be up close to a 46-3 doesn't make him anywhere near an early type horse, right? Now, his routes don't count here. Sometimes. But look at his, what are you gonna, look at his last two races. If he can't press it's not good. Let me tell you what, right now, right in this moment, the worst racing in all of California is in Stockton. The reason for that is that Golden Gate is still open. And that's where they're paying the money. It's like when Sacramento overlaps Bay Meadows. At the beginning of the meeting, the worst racing in all of California is Sacramento. When
As it is, the patients now know more than the clinicians. Everybody today is in therapy. And they come in and they shop therapists. And they talk more therapy talking to therapists. You know, it's really amazing. You've got to get a psychiatric dictionary to understand the patient nowadays. Everybody has had at least five therapists, those who are into that sort of thing. And the therapist, therapy, if you can avoid it, is a darn good thing. Because most people in psychiatry need it more than they're giving. That's why I got into horse racing. Horses are predictable. Horses are dependable. People lie to you. I'm a preacher. If you go to our New York seminar, the Reverend Bert Main, who sustains two rural churches in upstate New York with his horse race winning. I'm serious. You mean? He's going to give the invocation to our seminar. And he takes some of my stuff and makes sermons out of it. And one of his sermons was, he passed out a past performance chart on a horse from just Xerox from the race room to his congregation. He said, "Oh, well, you're looking at a past performance chart there. You see 10 races in there, and everything that horse did for 10 races, his earnings per start, his what he ran the first and second, third fractions in, everything is right there. That horse's past performance chart is available for anybody to see." "How many of you," he said to my congregation, "how many of you are willing to have a past performance chart on your life for everybody to read?" Then he looked at his watch and said, "Well, folks, I've got to cut the sermon short today because the post time has been moved up a half an hour." But he's a wonderful guy, and he makes sermons on all this stuff. And he keeps his congregation. Makes a little wine on the side, too. Anything to keep those two rural churches going. All right. The realities. These are I think most of you know these, but they'll amaze you. In 1960, 58 million Americans and Canadians, North Americans total, I suppose that includes Mexico City, Tijuana, and the Mexican books, but that's part of North America. So the 58 million people went to the track. Somebody told me that last year, the racing form put out that a total of 54 million had gone to the track. That means that 8 million less people are going to the track now than when in 1960. That disappoints me, is because that's what, 4 million people whose money we can't take. Because it's their money, remember, we're taking. But does that mean that 50, let's use the term 58, I like it better than 54, I don't like to see those declining figures. Let's say, how many of those people are different people? They're not 58 million different people, you all understand that, don't you? That's the total attendance at the collective racetracks in North America. We don't know how many different people, but we surmise that it'll be probably an extreme high to say 15 million who go with a degree of regularity. Let's use that figure, 15 million. Does that anybody think that's too low, or anybody think that's too high? Speak up. Sorry, I want to get a little feedback here, but it's probably right in that area somewhere, maybe a little low. On a given day, whether it's Santa Anita or the Great Waterford, Great Barrington Fair or Waterford Downs or wherever it might be, on a given day, 5% of the people leave the track with 95% of the money that's attributed after the track take. That is a statistic that is agreed upon by virtually everybody, garnered from Racing Forum facts and racetrack facts submitted to the Racing Forum. 5% on a given day. But that 5% includes the lucky folks who use their mother-in-law's phone number, their wife's favorite colors, their social security number, or just maybe put that, you ever use the one, that, this is a great system, get yourself a hat pin, put it through a certain point on the program, then turn the thing, and every time you see a hole in a horse's name, bet it. That's the second best system. After the dot system, I think that's about the best one I've ever used. However they got it, 5% go away with 95% of the money. Now, those who win on a regular basis, I don't mean necessarily win a lot, but those who always go away with a little more than they came with constitute 1%. Those whose skill and whose sense of reality, responsibility, and who use regression and record keeping being synonymous with each other, so you don't need 4 hours, constitute 1/10 of 1%. Okay, any mathematical genius? You know, I had to take remedial math to get into graduate school, so don't trust. The result, I can give you the numbers, right, but I can't give you the results of any adding or subtracting or dividing of the numbers. What is 1/10 of 1% of 15 million?
15,000.
How many?
15,000.
15, that's very good. Dick is a professor of mathematics, and he got that right off. He's in a good mood tonight. He's home. When he's on the road, he can't get it. On the road, he's so exhausted. I don't know, somewhere in there. 15,000 people in North America are making or supplementing their income through paramutual fund investments. That's quite a few. Now, I only know only about 450 of them are Meisters, so whether it kind of shatters my ego to realize that there are 14,550 people who are winning without the Sarton methodology. Well, when I finally figured that out, I was crushed for a week. Almost had to go to shock therapy. So you see, there is more than one way to win the races. I guarantee you one thing, whatever methodology those 15,000 people are using, they are taking responsibility, they are keeping records, they are above all aware of the realities of the race. They are not doing it with luck. They are not doing it with somebody else's suggestions. They are doing it because they're taking full responsibility for their own actions. 15,000. Anybody here do not want to be in that 15,000? Good. Because it's not going to get any higher. All you're going to do is replace somebody else if you're not in that 15,000 right now. Let me tell you why it's not going to get any higher. You know what the parimutuel system is? The parimutuel system says that if it gets any higher, the mutuals will go down, down, down until you have a minus pool. This is the balance. Now, we can add 40 more, but no, that's it. Not too many more, unless the population going to the races increases. Now, they passed racing in Alabama. They're going to have it in Iowa. More states are going to have racing, so there will be more people. And as there are more people, but it'll still be 0.1% who will make the majority of money. This 5, 1, and 0.1% will never change. If it does, the parimutuel will go down. The mutuals that you receive will go down, and it won't be a profitable investment anymore. I don't think there is much danger of getting very many more winners, percentage-wise, than we have now. Some terrible, terrible facts about the American public I must reveal to you, which I'm sure you know. 20% of the American public, the adult public, is illiterate. I'm talking about adults now, not children. And I'm not talking about minorities. I'm not talking about it's all over in Tennessee or it's down there. It's all around us. In the Caucasian community, it's greater per capita than it is in the Black and Mexican community. The least illiterate are Asiatics. But we all have to suffer the fact that 1 out of 5 Americans, mature Americans, adult Americans, is illiterate, functionally illiterate. Some of them hold down good jobs. Good secretaries. It's a national tragedy. It's not a new tragedy. It's been with us a long time. At one time, 34%. It's 20% now. It's 14% more were over there back in the 20s and 30s. So we're getting better. One thing I can assure you, though, is that virtually every one of those 1 in 5 go to the track. It seems like it to be. Dick counts, I don't know how he does it. He counts the number of people who go to the track by racing forums. And he also counts the number of people who go to the track with Bob's big boy thing and the B-deckers and Dukes and everything. And he comes up with a ratio of about 5 to 1 in favor of B-deckers, Dukes, the green sheet, the yellow sheet, the pink sheet. We have a pretty high ratio of people by the racing form in California tracks. You ought to go to Oaklawn, Hot Springs, Fairgrounds. We had the clubhouse to ourselves, practically, the lower part of the clubhouse at the Fairgrounds because we were a large group. We were the only people who had racing forms. Everybody had the stuff spread out on the thing, all the tip sheets, and they looked at our, wait, what's those funny things you got there? Racing form, lady. So, the one consolation we have is, and you know the parimutuel system demands, if we're going to win, we got to win it from them. We don't win from the track. We still have people all around the country who think that you're taking the track's money. People think that they fix the photos so your horse won't win, just so that they won't have to pay out that big exacta. The track could care less who wins. They could care less whether they put Pinky down or McCarron down. They say, well, if Pinky's in a photo, he always gets put down because they don't like him. They like Chris McCarron. He'll always win. We have got to get rid of the conspiracy theory. If we have it, if we can't cleanse our minds of it, we're all in trouble. If we don't think that racing is pretty much, now anything in which humans are involved can be corrupted to a degree, but if we don't accept the fact that racing is essentially an honest, straightforward, beatable situation, and we shouldn't be going to the track. Some people love to go to the track and point out a trip handicap and create all this. Look at this, put the chicken thing. He's not trying with that horse. He's stiffing my horse. Look at that trainer told him, they're doing this to me because they want me to lose. The doc jockey always stiffs the loser's horse. The trainer always dopes the the horse that the loser is on. The loser always loses because somebody had a buzzer on the other horse. The loser is always the victim of narcotic swindles and dope-taking jockeys and all the, and, but never, you ever hear a winner say that? I have never heard a winner yet say, hey, they're stiffing my horse. I have never heard a winner yet say, my God, when there's a photo finish, they always take mine and put it out of it. But losers always tell you that. Winners never seem to have this problem. I've seen people go from loser to winner who were screaming and yelling when they were losers, but never scream and yell anymore. Well, what a relief. So they get that in your ear, and then usually they got, especially when they got those New York accents. Hey, she's got to be easy on you, I would say. I was born in Brooklyn, so I could make fun of it. But usually in the horse rooms of Vegas, shows, hey, Charlie, you had a winner yet? I can't even pick my nose, much less a winner. And they go back and forth, and then you hear the litany of all the trainers stiffing horses and all the things that have been going on. And look at there, they can see it on the TV screen in Las Vegas. Look, at he held up his hand at the finish, there's a buzzer in it. They can see things that none of us can see. Because the marvelous insights that losers have is absolute perfect 20/20 hindsight as to why they lost. Winners don't perceive that. Winners don't even look, they say, oh yeah. Well, where do I go to get the payoff? One fellow said to me, and one fellow, well, I've been in that thing that I'm going to be in the lore of. You read next issue of Jakarta Gems, I'll be in the lore, because how many of you thought the Sartan methodology was difficult to understand? You're wrong, because James Selvidge says that I am the new king of the simplistic. But you see, Brutus is an honorable man. So it's really very simple. I just read about it myself. It hadn't come out yet. I got a galley proof. So being very simplistic, it should be very easy for everybody to understand and succeed with. That's our reality. Now, what is a winner? It doesn't necessarily mean you have to win $100,000, $50,000, $25,000 a year. Dick's going to talk about that in the goals. I have one couple from Iowa. They sold their liquor store.